I'm going to be speaking today about medicines and toiletries for Pesach. I'm talking about that because they told me you're learning Simta and Beis. What I'm going to talk about has a lot to do with that. I will do some things that are not in Tefillin and Beis, but I'm going to be focused on the part of the question that has to do with Tefillin and Beis, which is to say is, one whole part of the question is whether the person is a chole and what a person is allowed to do because they're sick. Hello? What they might be allowed to do because they're sick that they otherwise may not be allowed to do, that's not in Tefillin and Beis. I'm not going to talk about that part of it. I'm only talking about the angle of medicines and toiletries that has to do with Simon Tefillin and Beis, which has quite a lot to do with Tefillin and Beis. Okay? There's another part of Tefillin and Beis that we're no way we're going to get to, which is the end, some halachas about Bar Yirah, which also have somewhat to do with medicines. I'm going to put that on, I can't imagine getting to that. Okay, so what I am going to speak about is going to be in four sections. The first and the third are going to be more halachic, and the second and the fourth are going to be a little bit more practical, if I can use that word. Okay, so the first is I'm going to give you some assumptions or some basics that you probably know from certain learning Tefillin and Beis, and from the Chavetz that I suggested to you. We're going to start with that Chavetz. Chavetz is in Simen Kuf Gimel, and he asks a question. His question is like this. The din is, midoraisa, if you eat something shalai kederach achila in an abnormal manner, there's no iser to eat that food. Something that was treif, and you eat shalai kederach achila, is not asa midoraisa. It's asa midorabanan, but it's not asa midoraisa. He says, so once we have that din, why do we need a din to tell us that if you eat, that if something is inedible, that you're allowed to eat it? Why does it have to say another pasuk to tell us that food that becomes inedible, something treif that becomes inedible, is mutter? Obviously, if it's inedible, then you're going to eat it shalai kederach achila. So once we know that shalai kederach achila is mutter midoraisa, why does the Torah tell us that something that's not royal achila is mutter midoraisa? Of course it's mutter. It's not royal achila. It's shalai kederach achila. So why don't in the second limud to teach us that if it's not royal, that it's nifsa mechila, it's also mutter? Okay, it seems superfluous. So the Chavis says, it teaches us that there's a fundamental difference between inedible and shalai kederach achila. Nifsa mechila and shalai kederach achila are two different worlds. And the difference is like this. When something is nifsa mechila, it's not edible anymore, it's no longer usher. The isser that was on it is gone. It's not usher anymore. As opposed to, when something is shalai kederach achila, it means is, I don't violate any isser by eating it, because the act that I'm doing is shalai kederach. And the Torah told us, shalai kederach achila is not usher. Okay, I didn't do anything wrong. But the food itself is usher. Now, what's the difference? Who cares? In the end of the day, either way, I end up not doing anything wrong. Well, I don't do anything wrong because I didn't do something wrong, or because the thing is not a food which is usher. What's the difference between those two? So there's a whole bunch of differences. I'm going to give you four differences between them. Okay, one is, what happens if I take something that's shalai kederach achila? I'm taking something, let's say raw food, okay? I eat a raw potato, it's shalai kederach achila. But if I take it and I put spices on it or sugar onto it, and I'm able to get it down now, it would be reasonable to eat it, now I turned it into kederach achila. So the potato that was usher, it was usher the whole time. I was just off the hook because I ate shalai kederach achila. Well, if I find a way to make it kederach achila, I put enough ketchup onto it that it becomes, I can get it down, that it tastes good, then you're back to being usher again. As opposed to, if it's nifsa mechila, if it's not edible, then putting ketchup on it's not going to make a difference. If you pour as much ketchup as you want to, the thing that you're eating is not usher. So the fact that you can get it down makes no difference. Okay? That's one difference. Another difference is, something is only considered to be nifsa mechila if that state is irreversible. It is not edible, and it's never coming back. It can't be changed. As opposed to shalai kederach achila, most definitely could even be if it could be reversed. For example, if you drink sam yayin, which is boiling hot, okay, boiling hot. It's shalai kederach achila to eat food that's boiling hot. So midoraisa, you haven't been ever nisser. But of course, the food is nisser, and of course it's reversible. Okay, just leave it outside for a few minutes. It's going to cool down, and you'll be able to drink it. But if you ate it in the way that shalai kederach achila, then you're off. You were potter, you didn't do anything wrong. But is the food nifsa mechila? Of course it's not nifsa mechila, because it could be reversible. Okay. Third nafkamina.
Are there cases where nifsa mechila, like items as they're processing from one to another stage? Like, the internal mix-up in the amoeba, doesn't that happen?
Of course.
Isn't that fewer? Like, is that...
So that's...
So we wouldn't describe that as mixed form in our... I mean, not so, but theoretically...
Well, see, it's really not having...
Right, I understand.
It's
like,
but
this is
some of
the world of
gelatin. Right, so gelatin is the example of that, which is when the food becomes inedible, but it will be back to being edible later, that's not considered nifsa mechila. That's not nifsa mechila. Nifsa mechila is only when it's permanently inedible.
Even if that reflects like a development in technology that didn't exist thousands of years ago?
Why does that make a difference? I started off...
Thousands of years ago, this would be considered nifsa mechila, but nowadays it's not nifsa mechila.
Yeah, why is that strange to you? There used to be no way to make this edible. Now it is edible. Okay, in gelatin, it goes even a step further.
I think I'm not understanding. In that point, when it's in the interim stage, it is nifsa mechila. We're saying it doesn't have the halakhic status of being nifsa mechila.
Correct. Now, if you eat it, then it's like a mechila, because nobody eats food that's not edible. So you didn't do anything wrong because you ate something that's like a mechila. But is it nifsa mechila? No, it's not nifsa mechila because it just needs a little work done to it, and it'll be back to being edible again. So inherently, it's iser. But you didn't do anything wrong because you ate something that was not in a state that you could be over on it. Because when you were doing it, it was not an edible state, and people don't eat food like that. Okay, another thing. This actually has to do with sa'ar. I'll mention the sa'ar angle of it to explain. I wasn't going to say that, but I'll say that because it has to do with Pesach. Not tough and base, but like this. The Gemara says that sa'ar is not edible. Okay, sa'ar is... sourdough, you take dough and you let it sit for a day, and it collects so much yeast that it becomes sour and disgusting and you can't eat it. But it's royal chamer, but it's a chayrus, and therefore it's asr. So, most people reading that Gemara think that what the Gemara means is, it's a special din for the chametz. This is not edible, so really it should be mutter, but since it's super duper, and they could make another food chametz, so this is like super chametz, so even though it's not edible, it's still asr anyhow. Okay, that's how most people would read the Gemara. But that's not the truth. That's not, Ruchai Moses says that's not what the Gemara means. But what it means is like this. The Torah is teaching us when it says Sa'ar is Asr, that to be Asr, not only are things Asr when they're edible, but if they're even a food ingredient, that's also considered edible. So Sa'ar by itself is not edible. But Sa'ar is a food ingredient because you make bread out of it. You put it as a regular ingredient in making bread. So you wouldn't eat it by itself. But you eat it as part of other foods, so the Torah is not teaching anything special about chametz, or about chumrah of chametz, or nothing to do with that. It's teaching you that when a food, to be considered edible, even if it's edible as an ingredient, that's also edible. And the Gemara really says this, because the Gemara's in Yuma, says that if a person eats black pepper or vinegar, then it's midoraisa, you're an over an iser if you're talking about eating on Yom Kippur, because it's shalaka darach achila, because people don't eat black pepper, okay, people don't drink vinegar or eat oil, vegetable, you don't drink that. But it's not nifsa me'achila because it's a regular food ingredient, because black pepper goes into all kinds of foods. So it's not edible by itself. A food being, but it's not nifsa me'achila because it's a perfectly fine food ingredient. So just like sa'ar is a food ingredient, and that makes it considered to be edible, so too things that are usable as a food ingredient are considered edible, even though they're not technically, you can't eat a spoonful of black pepper, but you could use it as in your child, and therefore it's fine. Yes?
Sorry.
So the chumrah of Pesach still would be if you eat the sa'ar itself.
So my fourth nafkamina is that I'll say a different part of it. Okay, on Pesach, no. On Pesach, it doesn't say you shouldn't eat sa'ar. It says you shouldn't own sa'ar. Because... does it say sa'ar? No. So it says, sa'ar lo yimatzi v'techem. Sa'ar lo yimatzi v'techem means you can't... I don't know if that's... And is that talking about sa'ar? Okay, and maybe I'm wrong. I can't tell you why you do. What did you say? So you're not a lane. That doesn't mean you know what I mean. Okay, so let me just say the fourth thing before we get to his thing, because you brought it up. The fourth nafkamina is that if a food is shalaka derech achila, then you're still over on bayurah for owning it, because the food is still usher. I'll get to your question in 1 second. The point, it's still iser. So sa'ar, if you have baker's yeast in your house, baker's yeast at sa'ar, So baker's yeast, if you eat it, it's like a chila. If you eat it, you won't have any issur d'oraisa for eating it, because it's like a chila. But owning it is an issur b'ayira, because you own a thing which is not nusamech, it's not nusamech chila. Because even though it's not, so to speak, you can't bite into it, but you could use it, l'chameba yisus acheris, and therefore you over b'ayira for owning that item. Because, and only if it becomes nifsamei achila are you allowed to own it. If it's nifsamei achila, you're allowed to own it. But if it's just like a derech achila, then you're not allowed to own it. Because it's isser still. You just don't do anything wrong by eating it. Okay, but I'm not different than isser of owning it. Owning it, it's still a food item. Okay, did you want to say something? Okay, well, go ahead. Okay, so this is what the Chavistat says. We've learned that there's a difference between nifsamei achila and shalak derech achila. The orphan overlap each other. It's often that something that's nifsta mechila is like gedara chil also, but they're not always the same, and they have differences between them. Sometimes it's, so to speak, better to be one or better to be the other one, and that's why he's explaining why we have psukim, separate psukim, one for nifsta mechila and one shlo gedara chil. Okay. Now, that part that I said so far from the Chavis Das speaks it out, and the Chavis Das is everyone basically agrees to that. Okay, once you hear it and you look it through, you'll see that's pretty general accepted. But then the Chavis Das is something else that's, like, almost surprising. He doesn't really explain himself on this point. He says like this. When he's explaining these two different types of foods, there's Nifsa Mechila and Shalak Derech Achila, he says like this. He says Nifsa Mechila is where it's Nisrach Guf Ha'Isser. The food rotted. Okay, it rotted to become inedible. And when he describes a food as Shalak Derech Achila, he says it was Ira B'Soich Davar Mar. You added something unpleasant to it that made it become not oil achila, not that shalak edar achila. Now, those are both true. It's true that if it rots, it becomes inedible. That's true. And it's true that if you eat something unpleasant to a food, it could make it that shalak edar achila to eat anymore. It's not so the way people like to eat. But those don't seem to be any defining characteristics. Because something could rot to the point that it's shalak edar achila, or you could ear but davamar to the point that it's not edible either. Why are they connected to each other? There are two things. There's Nifsa Mechila and Shalak Derech Achila. And then there's Irba Davamar and Nisrach Gufa Isser. But why is he tying them to each other? He seems to tie them together to say to become inedible, you have to have rotted. Why do you have to rot to become inedible? Why can't you mix something into it to make it inedible? Why should that make a difference? So, my question clear? Okay, so what I think the answer is like this. I told you that when to become nifsa mechila means it's not edible anymore, it's only for something that's not reversible. Something that's reversible is not considered nifsa mechila, because it's just temporarily not edible. But if I just do X, Y, and Z, it'll become edible, that's not nifsa mechila. So now let's imagine this. Here's a made-up situation. This is not the truth, just made up. Let's imagine that if we have 5 parts per million of gasoline in apple juice, that's edible. And 6 parts per million is not edible. Okay, I totally made up those numbers. Okay, 5 parts per million is edible, and there's got to be a cutoff someplace. So 5 parts is not edible, is edible, and 6 parts is edible. And I then have 5 drops of gasoline, I'm looking at my numbers here, 5 drops of gasoline in 10 gallons of apple juice. Okay, that comes out to 6.6 parts per million. You're going to have to believe me on the math. Okay? 6.6 parts per million. So is that edible or is that not edible?
Not edible.
But guess what? We were eating B'Soich HaDavar. We put gasoline into our apple juice and we made it not edible. We put in this many drops into this many gallons and made it not edible. But guess what? It's automatically reversible, because if we add another 10 gallons of apple juice, all we have to do is add more apple juice to it, and guess what's going to happen? If we add another 10 gallons, all of a sudden it'll be 3.3 parts per million. And all of a sudden it'll become edible. So Ir B'Soich HaDavar has an automatic weakness that you could just add in more not Davar Mar, and all of a sudden it won't be not Roy Lachil anymore. I mean, there's a certain cutoff. The mess is making me crazy. If you add in this much Davar Mar, it becomes not edible. Well, guess what? You can't get the Davar Mar out. But you could just add in more non-mar into it, some of the isser into it. Just add more of it, and all of a sudden you will have reversed the amount, because there's got to be a ratio when it becomes back to being edible again. So just by adding more of the heter, more of the non-mar, actually not the heter, The edible parts, all of a sudden you reverse it. So the only way, what Chavazah is saying, the only way to become inedible is to rot. Because if it rots and it spoils, then there's nothing you could do about it. You can't undo that. You could pour ketchup on top of it, but that's not going to make it edible again. It will remain inedible.
But, I mean, you would think the same thing. If I took rotten food and I was just added healthy food until I let
No, because then you covered up the issur.
Right, you have to be saying
no, I covered up the issur. As opposed to over here, I didn't cover up the issur. The part that spoiled still spoiled. I just made it that the ratio is different now. It used to be 5 drops in 10 gallons. Now it's 5 drops in 20 gallons. So I didn't do anything. I didn't change anything about my bad thing is still bad, but the good stayed good. As opposed to here, the piece of nevela that rotted, or the piece of bread that spoiled in the Gemara, that food is never coming back. There's nothing I could do to make it back. I could cover it up, I could get around it, I could mash to get it down, but I can't do anything to the food to make it taste any better. As opposed to my apple juice, I can make my apple juice taste better, just pour a little more apple juice and it'll taste good. I'm not doing anything different to change that, the inherently what it is, I'm just giving some more of it.
Something
could be nifsam echila, but would be keder echila, of course, if you pour enough ketchup onto it, then it's keder, it's keder echila, because I managed to get it down, but that doesn't make a difference, because nifsal is nifsal, nifsal is nifsal, and if it's nifsal, then I'm allowed to eat it, I'm allowed to eat it, okay, we're going to come into it, the rabbanans in a second, but midrash, I'm allowed to eat, okay, so now, I have a question. Now we come to a question from Tufnim and Bays. Okay? What's a case in Tufnim and Bays of food that's not Roy Lachila? So the two of the cases in Tufnim and Bays are you had a tanning solution that had flour inside of it. Or you had ink that has beer inside of it. Okay? Those cases, what's wrong with the beer? The beer is perfectly edible. Just, it's mixed in with all kinds of other stuff that mixes into ink. So here the Chavazdas told us that Irvut of Amar doesn't make it Nifsum Me'achila. Well, the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to own it on Pesach. Own it means it's Nifsum Me'achila, right? You're only allowed to own things that are Nifsum. So like a Derech doesn't let you own it, because it's a Isser. So it has to be Nifsum Me'achila. So the beer that has other stuff mixed with it, that makes it into ink. So the beer is just Irvut of Amar. We just put some other stuff into it. So why is the beer considered to be nifsum me'achil, that I'm allowed to own it on Pesach? Okay, those are cases here in Tufnim Beis of things that you're allowed to own on Pesach. Well, what's the Chavazdas just, he doesn't directly say, but he basically says, Irvut of Amar doesn't let you eat it. That doesn't make it nifsum me'achil. It has to rot. The beer didn't rot. Nothing happened to the beer. So I think the difference is, Irvut of Amar means it's basically apple juice, with a few drops of gasoline in it. So the overall thing we have here is apple juice with a little gasoline in it. As opposed to the ink, I have basically ink with a little beer inside of it. Okay, the beer is not the majority of the item. Or I have tanning solution, which has a little bit of flour inside of it. So first we look at the thing and say, is this thing chametz or is it not chametz? Is it primarily chametz or not chametz? So we say, primarily, this is not chametz. Okay, well, if it's not chametz and it's not edible, then it's fine. It's not roi lachil. We don't say, I could add more stuff onto it and this and that to make it back edible. As opposed to my apple juice case, basically it's apple juice with a little bit, a minority, a miut of gasoline in it. So I say, basically, it's apple juice, and it's not nifsum lachil, because I could just add a little more apple juice, and it'll be back to being roi lachil. Okay? Okay, so we've now heard what it means to be nifsum me'achila. We've also heard what it means to be shlokei derech achila. Okay, this is all warm up to when we're going to get to some of these things. You could eat a zillion gallons of beer, but since the roiv is not beer, so we don't judge this as beer with some irvut of amar. We judge it as ink that has some beer inside of it. So beer with a little ink, so to speak, in it, we would say that's just irvut of amar. That's not nifsum me'achila. But ink that has a little beer in it. With the meat is beer, we say, no, this thing is basically ink. It's not edible. The fact is, little beer doesn't take away from it. It's basically an inedible item. It's ink. And ink is not edible. The fact that it has little beer doesn't make a difference. Okay. Now, the other thing we need to know, which is also very much a Tafna based in, is the Din of Achshavei. Din of Achshavei. What is that? I keep telling you that if something is not royal achila, then if it's nifsal me'achila, you're allowed to eat it. Okay, which is true. Midraisa, you're allowed to eat it. But midrabanan, there's a thing called achshavei. What does achshavei mean? Achshavei means is the fact that I'm eating it shows that I consider it to be edible. Now, at least midrabanan, I consider it to be edible. So there's an isra achila. So, for example, if I have something that's not royal achila, I'm allowed to keep it on Pesach. You know, isra b'ayiro, because it's nifsal me'achila, I'm allowed to keep it. I'm allowed to have hanor from it also. But if I eat it, then I've shown that I consider it to be edible. And if I consider it to be edible, then midrabanan, I was over on the isra of eating chametz. It inherently, it's not royal achila, but it's as if now pretend royal achila, and then it's pretend royal achila, therefore I'm not allowed to eat it, so to speak. I'm not allowed to eat it. Okay? Now, that's true. That's a din and tough and base. But there's an exception to that rule, and the exception to that rule is, that you're probably familiar with, is medicines. Okay? When we have a medicine, we don't say achshavei when we eat a medicine. And there are two reasons. For now, I'm just going to tell you the two reasons, but we'll see later enough community between these two reasons. Okay, there's two reasons. So Rav Moshe says, and Rav Chaim Moses says the same thing, that when a person eats something that's inedible, the eating of that item shows that he considers it edible. Why else would you be eating it if not that you consider it edible? Even though the regular people don't think it's edible, you obviously think it's edible. He said, but when you eat a medicine, that doesn't show that I consider it edible. When people take medicines, they take it because they want to get better. They're not taking it because they think, you don't eat things that are not, unless they're food, unless they taste good. Well, so if you eat it, it must be a riot that it tastes good. But here, no, the fact that I eat it just shows I want to get better. I have an ingrown toenail and I'm eating this thing, so I'm just eating it because I want to get better. It has nothing to do with my considering it to be food. People do all kinds of crazy things to get better. They do all kinds of strange things that are not the typical. So it doesn't prove that I want to eat, that I consider it food. It proves that I want to get better. Okay, nothing will get any better. There's no achshavei on that. Okay, that's what Moshe says. The Chazon Ish says a variation. He says, it's very similar, but not exactly the same. Chazon Ish says, when I eat a medicine, I eat something medicinal, what I'm showing is that the active ingredient in that item is something that I want. I consider the active ingredient in there, let's say the antibiotics, I consider that to be the edible part. That's the part I want. The fact that to get it down, they have to wrap it up in all kinds of other junk. The pill is made up with all kinds of other things, all kinds of what we call inactive ingredients. That's not what I want. It's just the only way to get it. That's the only way, the only way they package it is if it comes in a pill with a lot of other stuff mixed into it. The part that the achshavei would be on the part that I want, the active ingredient. The inactive ingredient, there's no achshavei on that, because I don't want that. I'm just stuck with it. I have no choice but to take that in. And therefore, there's no achshavei on pills or tablets, because achshavei is only on the part that you want, not the part that you're sort of stuck with. Okay? That's what the Chazon Ish says. So the nafkamina you hear right away between them is, okay, a very uncommon nafkamina is, what would happen if the active ingredient was the one that was treif, or chametz stick? Okay? If the active ingredient, Rav Moshe says, doesn't make a difference. Active, doesn't make a difference what it is. You take medicine, shows that you want to get better. Doesn't have anything showing that you consider it to be food, and it would be mutter to take it. As opposed to the Chazon Ish, he just says is the typical thing that's treif or chametz stick is the inactive ingredient. So he says, all I show in achshavei is on the active ingredient. If this is the inactive ingredient, that doesn't mean anything. I don't have to worry about that. Okay? It's not such a common thing. For your curiosity, there is something called premarin. Premarin is a contraction. It sounds really nice. Doesn't it sound like a nice medicinal item? But it's a contraction for the words pregnant, mere, urine. Okay? And it has some kind of medicinal benefits. So there, that's the active ingredient. So mere, gaim, so hamar. Which is also, so here the active ingredient is the thing that might be treif. So, but most pills, most medicines are not like that. Most medicines, the active ingredient is not the treif or chametz. It's the inactive ingredients that go along with it. As I'll tell you in a few minutes. Okay, but we're going to hear another nafkamina. But for now, you just believe me. We have these two reasons, Rav Moshe and Chazon Ish, as to why there's no achshavei when taking a medicine. So there's achshavei in other things, but not on medicinal items. Okay. So far I told you my first, these are some background halachic assumptions that we're going to work with. So now, to a little bit practical. Okay. For our examples, I'm going to tell you five ingredients that are reasonably common in medicines and toiletries and these kind of things that are questions of chametz, that they are potentially made of chametz. I'll tell you, they're not the only five ingredients, but they're five common ones. I'm going to tell you what they are and why they might be chametz. Okay? It'll just help us understand as we go on. Okay, the first is starch. Okay? Starch is like, think about, it's like the main component of wheat and potatoes and corn. Is the main component that they're made of is starch. And so if you have a starch, the status of that starch depends on what grain it came from. Okay, if it came from wheat, then it'll be chametz. And corn would be kidneys, or let's say potatoes, it would be nothing. It would be completely mutter. Okay? So starch is often like a filler. In a medicine, the word filler is because the active part is so tiny that they can't sell it to you in these tiny, you can't eat such a regular 2 grains of something. So they mix it in with something else, okay? With something else so that you can get it down, that there's something to hold on to, that you can touch, okay? So like in this one, in this tablet over here, I'm pretty sure, yeah. So one of the ingredients here says pre-gelatinized starch. Okay, that the word gelatinized, nothing with gelatin, but pre-gelatinized starch, okay? So this starch that's in here, this is a tablet, there's a tablet. The tablet that's here, that starch could be made out of wheat, or corn, or potatoes, or any other starch, okay? We don't know what it's made out of, it just says pre-gelatinized starch, we don't know what that is. Okay, so that's one thing that could possibly come. Okay, number two, is something called ethanol, or what you think of as beverage alcohol, like if you drink at a kiddush, okay, that's called ethanol, okay, it's kind of alcohol. How do you make ethanol, and why would it be chametz? You make it, ethanol comes from sugar that comes fermented, you get yeast into sugar, and it becomes alcohol. Well, how do you get sugar? Well, you get sugar from literally sugar, or from fruit, like think about wine is made from the sugar that comes out of grapes, or you can get it from starch. How do you get it from starch? If you take a starch, and you break it down into sugars, okay, just believe me, you break down the starch into sugars, and when you break into sugars, now it's a sugar, add some yeast into it, and voila, you get alcohol. So you want to make bourbon, and you make it out of corn. One of the grains you make it out of is corn. You take corn, break the starch that's in corn down into sugar, like think of corn syrup, right? You break it into corn syrup, that's a sugar made out of corn starch, and then you add some yeast, and it turns into alcohol, and you move it along a little bit, and it turns into bourbon. Okay? So ethanol is alcohol, what we would call like beverage alcohol, and it's typically made almost always from sugars or starches. So now for this, whether it's chametz depends on the starch that it came from, like last time, depends what starch you started from, and all those other ingredients I mentioned to you, like the enzyme that turns it from starch into sugar, that could be made out of barley. The yeast could be chametz also. So depending on all those pieces over there, will depend on whether it's chametz or it's not chametz.
What other yeast
besides chametz? Oh, most yeast, not chametz. No, okay, so right, that's a separate question. Sa'ar is sourdough. That's natural yeast. You take flour and water, yeast grows in it into like that. But most yeast that we have is yeast that just grows in, it's called a fermentation. We just grow it. It's usually not chametz at all. Okay. Most yeast. I mean, if you have wine in your house, that's because someone has yeast in, there's yeast in there. So now, it could be the yeast is from the grapes, but usually not. They added yeast into it. And most wine is crushed for Pesach because the yeast is not chametz. Okay, now, what I just told you, ethanol, or beverage alcohol, is you would usually find it in like deodorants, colognes, perfumes, or mouthwash. Okay, so like in this mouthwash over here, it's, I think it says on it, it's 21% alcohol. Okay? Yeah, it's the second ingredient. It's 21.6% alcohol. Okay, so the alcohol that's in here, it could be it comes from sugar or wheat or potatoes or anything else. We have no idea what it comes from. Okay, that's another potential of something that could have chametz into it. Okay, I think this spray also is common in things like this, in spray here. The first ingredient is it's 75.5% alcohol. Okay, this spray. so that's another ingredient that could be could be chametzik. Actually, alcohol was in Tafnabase, no? What do you think about it? Whiskey? Isn't Tafnabase? Maybe that's in Tafnabase.
It wasn't in Mechabra, but...
Maybe in Pisa, yeah, well, of course not in Mechabra. Okay, maybe it's in Tafnabase Zion? I don't know. I think it's in Tafnabase. Okay, number three. Number three is sorbitol. Okay, what's sorbitol? Sorbitol is called a sugar alcohol. Okay, you take a sugar, a glucose sugar, and you do something called hydrogenation, whatever that means, and it turns the sugar into a sugar alcohol. Okay, what's the point? The point is that the sugar alcohol, the sorbitol, is basically as sweet as sugar is, but it has much less calories, so that's why it's used in like some dietetic type items, but for medicinal type items, for pharmaceutical items, it has a big advantage that it doesn't attract cavities. Doesn't grow cavities in it. So just about every single toothpaste out there has sorbitol in it. Okay? It's almost in every single toothpaste. Okay, and this toothpaste is the very first ingredient. Okay, it's sorbitol. Okay? It's usually one of the first ingredients because it makes the toothpaste taste sweet, but it doesn't grow cavities. Pretty silly idea to put something to brush your teeth with something that makes you grow cavities. That wouldn't be very smart. So like this, they put sorbitol because it tastes good. But it doesn't grow, cavities don't grow on it, okay? So that's a good combination. So that's why it's basically in every toothpaste, it's got sorbitol. So sorbitol is a common ingredient, and it's potentially common, okay? Because sorbitol, I told you, it's made from sugar. And the sugar comes from a starch, okay? And that starch could be anything, as I told you until now, it could be any of those things, okay? Two more. The next one is xanthan gum. Okay, xanthan gum is a thickener. It's very xanthan gum. It starts with an X. Okay, it's good if you play Scrabble. Okay, starts with an X. Xanthan, X-A-N-T-H-A-N. It's a thickener. It's made by something called fermentation, which also starts with sugar, which starts from starch. Same again. And it's used as a thickener. For whatever reason, it's common in liquid medicines. I don't know how much in over-the-counter medicines, but in prescription medicine, it thickens it, gives it more body to it. It's often not even bought the b'shishim. It's probably a mime also, but it's often not bought the b'shishim. And it can be, and again, it's something that starts off with sugar. It's a fermentation from sugar, whatever that means. Don't worry about that. Made from sugar, and it's, the sugar, again, comes from a starch. It doesn't come from sugar like you use in your kitchen. It comes from sugar that comes from a starch usually, and then that starch could be chametz, okay, and plus the enzymes to turn into sugar. And my last ingredient to tell you is flavors. So flavors are made from many different chemicals mixed together to give some kind of a flavor to them. So, for example, a flavor ingredient is called ethyl butyrate. The ethyl butyrate is made from ethyl alcohol. That's what you make it from. So ethyl butyrate, or could be made from there. Ethyl butyrate gives a fruity flavor to foods. So if you have bubblegum flavored something or other, there's a possibility that one of the components is ethyl butyrate. So if the ethyl butyrate is chametz, then ignoring the possibility of zevzegarm, you just have to ignore that for now, then if the ethyl butyrate is chametz, it's an avidul taima. It's in very small amounts, but it's avidul taima, and it would make your food chametz then. Okay? Now, I'm telling you the chametz issues. There are equal amounts of trace issues to all these items also, but we're learning Tafim Beis, we're not learning Yisav Heter, we're learning just chametz. So these are five things to think about that might be chametz. Okay. So now back to the halachic part. So now we have some practical information, what we're looking out for. Okay, so now, person has a liquid medicine. Okay. So a tablet, okay, before I get to liquid, a tablet we're assuming is not considered edible. Okay, and I told you that even though this, we don't have to worry about achshavei for that. So like this thing over here, this one over here, this tablet, it's not considered royal achila. You try biting into it, you'll see it's not royal achila. And the fact that I eat it doesn't mean anything. The fact that I eat it doesn't make it considered, we don't say achshavei for that. But in a liquid medicine, I drink it. So it seems like it tastes okay. I've just told you different possibilities of what could be chametzik about that item. So am I allowed to use it on Pesach or am I not allowed to use it on Pesach? So, here's a question. is it possible that that liquid medicine is considered not royal achila? You say, wait, how can it be not royal achila when people drink it? If people drink it, then sure, it seems like it's royal achila. Okay? But on the other hand, if I give you a choice, okay, and I put out Pepsi and seltzer and cough medicine, okay, which one would you choose to drink? Okay, forget about the health side of it. Which one would you choose to drink? Not one person would taste a thing that tastes like cough medicine. Nobody. That's not a thing that people choose to eat. They eat it because they got to get it down. Like, I have a spoonful of it, I can get it down. But I would never choose to eat it. Could you imagine on a plane, they would come in and say, hi, would you like Sprite, seltzer, or cough medicine? How many people would choose cough medicine? I mean, they don't choose that as a beverage that they want to eat. So is that considered royal achila or not royal achila? What's the cutoff? Royal achila means is I can eat it, or I can eat cough medicine, people drink it all the time. Or royal achila means is it's a kind of like a food item. Like, people choose to eat that food when they want to. Nobody chooses to eat this, that a food that tastes like that. Nobody would choose to eat a food that tastes like that. So?
My 2-year-old has a Seneca every day.
Yes?
He enjoys it.
Okay, so it's true that there are some of these are more edible, and I was going to say that in a second, but let's take ones that are not as good. So the answer, seemingly, is in Simen Tafen Beis. The answer to that question is in Simen Tafen Beis, and it says like this. Halacha Dalet. It says, Davar Shenasar B'chametz, Ve'eino Michael Adon Klal. If you have something that has chametz mixed into it, and nobody would eat it, Oy, She'eino Michael Kol Adon, or it's not eaten by all people, Kegain, Theriak, I'm going to tell you what that means in a second. He says, you're allowed to keep it because it's considered not royal achila. You can't eat it because of achshari. Okay, we'll get to that part in a second. But he just told you foods that are not considered royal achila. So he said two ways to be not royal achila. It could either be not royal achila because it's ein amaychal adam klal. Nobody could possibly eat this. Okay, like the Gemara's case of a rotted piece of bread, a moldy piece of bread. Nobody can eat it. What does that mean? Eina Michael Kol Adam. What was the, how is that different than Michael Adam Kol? So Mishbura says that it means is the only people who eat this medicine, the only people who eat these things are people who are sick. Regular people would never choose to eat this. Only it's Eina Michael Kol Adam. It's not for all people. Meaning some people eat it when they're stuck. They have to eat it, so they eat it. But regular people wouldn't want to eat this food. So the Shulchan Aruch says that that's also considered to be not royal achila. He says two cases. Ein amachal adam klal, nobody would eat this. That's what we usually think of not royal achila. He says, or it's something that regular people wouldn't eat. Cholim would eat it, but regular people wouldn't eat it. So that sure sounds like a description of these liquid medicines. That's what sure sounds like it, which is regular people wouldn't choose to eat them, but people who are sick would eat them. If you have to get it down, yeah, you can get it down. A sick person couldn't eat a piece of wood, even if they tried, okay? I mean, maybe you would force it down them, but if you said you have to have a piece of wood, drink some gasoline, it's not going to happen. They can't get it down. But if you give them cough medicine, if I have to drink it, I'll drink it, I'll get it down. Okay, so it would seem like from the Shulchan Aruch that a lot of these foods are considered, a lot of these liquid medicines would be considered not royal achila, okay, which is a big difference for us. It means you would be allowed to keep it. It means is, except for achshavei, you'd be allowed to eat it also. Okay? We'll talk about the achshaveis in a second, but if not, aside from the achshaveis, only issued rabbanon. Certain people would be allowed to be this rabbanon. That's not a tough and base question. But it would be much less serious if it's really not royal achila. So some people, some poiskim, accept that. And they say, these things are not considered royal achila. And therefore, we don't have to worry about the kashrus or the chametz shavei. And others say, no, it's not what it means. It means things like these much worse. Because these kind of things are pretty much more edible than what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. He's talking about stuff that tastes pretty bad news. As opposed to my cough medicine, that tastes pretty not bad. It's not so terrible. It might not be my first choice, but it's not so terrible. And then there are those people who would say we can talk about what Shulchan Aruch means, but just like his child likes to eat Senecot, okay, most people can't stand Senecot, actually, of all things. What is it? It's a laxative, but most people won't even take it in a liquid. They sell it as like a chocolate bar because it tastes so awful.
Yeah,
it's very hard because most people would never take it. So that's why they sell it in a chocolate bar. Literally, it comes in a chocolate bar for most people or on a pill. But for kids who can't take a pill, they take it like that, and it tastes really awful. It really does. So but his kid likes it. So there are people who say is. That case that Machaber is talking about is a case, what, you know, think about, I don't know what he had in his day, what they had to take for medicines, but our liquid medicines are, and most hashgachas, at least it was for us, assume that liquid medicines, we treat them as edible. Because we're not, but there are those who think not, or who think at least specific ones are so bad that they're not considered edible. Okay? So, in theory, the Machaber has told us that there's such a thing that a person could get it down, but it's only a person who is sick would take that thing. That's considered not Roi Lechila also. Okay, so whether our liquid medicines fall into that category or not, is, again, I'm telling you, it's a question whether it does or doesn't, but there's such a thing. To be considered not Roi Lechila doesn't have to be putrid. Okay, there's a cutoff, but whether our liquid medicines, that's a question which side of the line they're on. Okay, but the line is not as far as you might think it is. That's what my point is. Okay? Okay, now, I told you that this is the din of achshavei. Okay? Turn this din of achshavei, that if a food is not royal achila, and let's say it was betrayed, but you choose to eat it anyhow, with the rabbanon, you're not allowed to eat it. Because eating it shows that you consider it to be isra. Okay? Now, then I told you that the din of achshavei doesn't apply to medicines. Because right, when people take medicines, they don't mean it. They just want to get better, or they just have the inactive ingredient. Okay, so the problem is, I can tell that to lots of people, but if you're learning Tafim Beis, you shouldn't buy it from me, especially because I just read it to you. Because what's the case in Shulchan Aruch that tells us the Din of Achshavei? What's the case that the Shulchan Aruch chooses to tell us the Din of Achshavei? I just read it to you. Okay, the case of that the Shulchan Aruch tells you the Din of Achshavei is the case of a person. Okay, the kind of a food that a person eats because they're sick. That was the case when the Shulchan Aruch says, you're allowed to keep it, you can't eat it on Pesach because eating it on Pesach is achshavei. That's why now you're allowed to keep it because it's not royal achila. But if you're allowed to keep it, it must not be royal achila. So why can't you eat it? You can't eat it because of achshavei. Well, what's the thing he's telling you about? The food he's telling you about is theriac, okay? Okay. Even before I tell you what theriac is, I just told you Enot Michael Kol Adam meant is it's only used for medicinal purposes. Why? But wait a second. Didn't you just tell me a few minutes ago that if it's a medicine, then that's not considered? There's no achshavei medicines. But the Shulchan Aruch's case of achshavei is a medicine. So how can I tell you that Rav Moshe and the Chazanish said that there's no achshavei medicines when the Shulchan Aruch's case of achshavei is a case of medicine? So what's going on over here? Is it actually a medicine or is it not actually a medicine? So, here we come to an afkamina. According to the Chazon Ish, the question that I just asked you is not a question. Because the Chazon Ish said, we only don't say actually a medicine when it's the inactive ingredients. Well, in the days of Shulchan Aruch and the days of Theriac, there weren't such things as inactive ingredients. People didn't have inactive ingredients. Whatever the medicine was, that was the medicine. Theriac is maybe this whole concoction of different stuff that you mix together. That's what made you better. They didn't throw in other stuff that was inactive. So according to Chazon Ish, it's clear why this is the case of achshavei. What Chazon Ish just said was, the inactive ingredients don't count, aren't achshavei, because I don't want the inactive ingredients, I don't want the active ingredients. Well, when you're taking a medicine, in the Shulchan Aruch type medicine, you're only taking active ingredients. So the reason why there's achshavei on it is because the thing that I'm eating is the thing that I want to have. So that's why there's achshavei on it. So the question I asked you is not a question on the Chazon Ish. He took the medicine, he took the theriac, he was taking it because that's what he wanted to get better. So if he took it to get better, that's achshavei. The Chazon Ish just said in a modern medicine there's no achshavei, because in a modern medicine the starch that's in here is not what I want, this is a laxative. Okay? The starch is not the laxative is the magnesium that's in here. So the magnesium there might be achshavei on, but on the starch that's in here, there's no achshavei on the starch, I don't give it the starch. Just the only way to get it down is through with the starch there. But when you talk about the medicine, the shchros kind of medicine, whatever they mixed together was the thing that made me better. So if I eat it, that's considered achshavei. But our question is on Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe said, is achshavei doesn't apply to medicinal type items because when people take medicine, they're just trying to get better. It doesn't show that they consider this to be a food. Really? Well, the Shulchan Aruch says that it is. The Shulchan Aruch's case is a case of a person taking medicine, and yet he says, that there's achshavei on that. Okay, so to answer the question, I'll tell you what I think. To help tell you what I think, I'm going to first have to tell you what theriac is. Okay, it goes by different names. I pronounce it theriac. That's how we would say it. Of course, we've got Chiako or Dariaka, different ways of saying it. The Sokhnar, however you think that the first tough is pronounced, if you think it's Tariak like most of us would pronounce it, or if you're more of a medactic and you're dipping and you think that's a TH, then you think it's Dariak, whichever one you want it to be. Okay? There's different ways to spell that same word. Okay, anyhow. So, it's brought in the Gemara, this thing called Tariak. It's all in all kinds of non-Jewish sources also. It has an assortment of herbs, foods, and animal parts. Okay, one of the things it has in it is from snakes. And you mix this whole potion together and use it as an anti-venom. Okay, you were bit by a snake, and you took this medicine. Now, I told you I'm not going to talk about person doing things that might be motive because he's a chosesh v'sakana. But it's pretty obvious, without even talking about that, it's pretty obvious that a person got bit by a snake, he shouldn't think about what he's taking. Right? If you got bit by a snake, he shouldn't think about whether he should take Tariak or not. If that's going to make you better from the snake biting you, you should definitely take it. So, the Shulchan Aruch case that he's talking about over here is not a person taking Tariak for that reason. Okay, so, a person would keep it in their house. In those days, people would keep it. It was like what used to be here. It's not considered appropriate anymore. But it used to be that people had in their house. You remember from when you were a kid, they had cervical ipecac, I don't know how to pronounce it correctly, and that was there in case a person swallowed something that was not good for them. They take this and it would make them vomit. Okay? They don't do it anymore. But it used to be that that's what people were given, and every house had one, because when you needed it, you weren't going to go to the pharmacy to buy one. So everyone had in their house a bottle of it, so that in case the kid ate something, drank something they weren't supposed to, they needed to vomit, they would take this and he would throw up. Okay? So that's what the Tariak was. People kept it in their house to have, in case they get bit by a snake, they needed this anti-venom, they would take this medicine. So that's what Shabbat says, you can keep it. But what's the guy who's taking it? He's not taking it because he was bit by a snake. Because if he was bit by a snake, that's not the question over here. What it is that Tariak was very expensive, and the people who were wealthier, or nobility, those kind of people who could afford it, would take it as a prophylactic. Those people would take it regularly, would take small amounts of it to build up in their body a resistance so that they won't be hurt if they get bit by a snake. So when the Shulchan Aruch says that a person is not allowed to take it, and he's not talking about the guy who got bit by a snake, it's obvious that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the kind of people who take it every day. They just take it just to keep them from getting sick. Okay, they're not taking it. So those people who are taking it they're not taking it. What Ramosha said, a person, if you take it, shows that you consider it to be medicine rather than you consider it to be a food. Well, for these people, that's not what it was. They weren't taking it as a medicinal item. They were taking it prophylactically. So if we could see from here that if you take a medicine like that as a prophylactic, just to prevent disease, just a low dose to prevent disease, then we would say actually. But what Ramosha said about a person who actually takes a medicine, he's taking a medicine because right now I'm sick and I take this thing to heal myself, it's still correct that there is no actually on that kind of food.
This is a big comment, this answer.
This what?
This is a big comment.
That because?
That means prophylactic medicine is actually.
That's what it would seem like. Well, I thought my question was better than the answer.
No, I understand.
I'm not sure that my answer is right.
I think a lot of medicines that are like this. A person, wants to be able to enjoy milk during Pesach, and they have lactose intolerance, and it happens to be their prophylactic lactate or whatever has stomach, you wouldn't be allowed to take them.
That's an interesting point. Interesting. So you're saying if I do it...
I'm saying...
Okay, I have to think about that.
I would have thought, yeah, for sure, it's not enough, all right?
Okay, it's a good question. It's a good point. Maybe we have to think whether that's true or not. I thought, but if you don't like my answer, I'm waiting for a better answer. The case of Shulchan Aruch of Achshavei was the case that Rashi said you're allowed. There's no Achshavei, so make up your mind. Yes or no? Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, now let's go to another case has lactate is very practical, but practical for a lot of people, and that is toothpaste and mouthwash. So, toothpaste and mouthwash are examples of this difference I told you as to where's the line for considered edible and not edible. What's the difference between an edible item and a not edible item? So the Shulchan Aruch told us that if it's, you could get it down, but only people who would eat it are people who are sick. That's not considered royal achila. So, I told you that, like for liquid medicines, there are people who put liquid medicine on different sides of that line. Is this considered to be the thing that you can get it down, but you only take it if you were really sick? in which case you're not Rav Achila. Or say, no, it tastes perfectly fine. It's not exactly as good as Pepsi, but it's, you know, close enough. Okay? So, a toothpaste and mouthwash are examples of that. Because toothpaste and mouthwash are, again, things that most people, if you offer a choice, if I put out Listerine and Pepsi on the table, okay, most people would choose the Pepsi. Okay? Most people wouldn't choose that as a beverage. Okay? Now there are kids who eat toothpaste. There are people who are alcoholics who get stuck who will drink Listerine. Okay? But most people would consider it to be not a regular food type item. Okay? It doesn't have a taste. If we put out jelly beans and toothpaste, most people would not pick the toothpaste. Okay? That's not the kind of taste they would go for. Okay? So it's a question whether those should be considered edible or not edible. Okay? So over here, you may or may not be familiar people take, rabbis take different positions on this, and the CRC does a split on this one. Okay, and we do like this. For year-round, if you call the CRC now and say to them, hi, I want to use this and this brand of toothpaste or mouthwash, they'll tell you, we consider it to be not royal achila, and you can use any one of them. Okay, even though there are ingredients in there that might be not kosher, you can use any one you want to, and you could use them. That's what they'll tell you. If you call up right now and say, can I use brand X of toothpaste or mouthwash, they'll say, you can use any kind. When it comes to Pesach, they'll tell you, nope, you have to get ones that you know don't have any chametz in them. For Pesach, they're taking on a stricter position to say these are considered royal achila, and therefore, since it has ingredients, I told you, the mouthwash, which usually has alcohol, and the toothpaste, which usually has sorbitol, they're going to tell you, no, you can only get one that you know does not have chametz in it. Okay, so that's different. Year-round, they have equal kosher, non-kosher issues them also. It's not only a chametz issue, it's a year-round, there are other ingredients that would be possibly treif. So, year-round, they're saying, it's not royal achila, you can take anyone you want to. For Pesach, they'll tell you, no, you have to get one that you know doesn't have chametz in it. And that's because we're taking a different position for year-round than for Pesach. For year-round, we're saying, that's not considered royal achila. For Pesach, we're saying, yeah, it is royal achila, you should be makbid and only use one that you know doesn't have chametz in it. Okay? So it's a split. Okay? But it's reflective of how different parties can look at it. Okay? One time, they wanted to know, when I worked at OU, they wanted to know what the OU's Priskin thought about scope, okay, whether it was Royal Achille or not. So Rubelsky, I don't remember if he tasted it, I think he did. He says, of course this is Royal Achille. Of course, people could drink this. Royal Achille would be like gasoline. Of course this is Royal Achille. And Rabbi Shachs looked and he says, are you crazy? Who would drink this stuff? Yeah, if I got to do it, I have to rinse it in my mouth. Okay, but you didn't even drink this stuff? Of course it's not really here. Okay, and that's reflective of, again, there's two different ways of looking at it. What the line is. Okay, the Machaber told us to be not really here. It doesn't have to be completely putrid. Okay, it has to be, Ein HaMeichel Kol Adam was also good enough. Okay, so the question was just some of these things, which side of that line do they fit onto? Okay, so again, different rabbis take different positions on it. Again, and year-round, the CRC tells you, you can use any of them. And for Pesach, they'll tell you the other direction. They should be marked and only get ones that don't have chametz. Okay. Another question about edible and not edible. We have two more questions before we get to the last part. The next like this. On Listerine, the alcohol that's listed here, it just says alcohol, 21 point whatever percent. Okay. On this one, this is what's called sunscreen, it doesn't say alcohol, it says SD alcohol 40 DHB, okay, it's 75%, okay? So what does all that rest of the gibberish mean? SD 40 DHB, what does that mean? Okay, and that means that this is SD, these things are specially denatured. Okay, what does denature mean? Denature means it's like this. The government charges really high taxes on beverage alcohol. So let's say a bottle of whiskey that you buy, let's say it really costs $20, it should cost $20, there's approximately 100% tax on it. So it costs you $40 because it should have sold for $20, but there's another $20 worth of taxes on it. They figure if you they call it a sin tax. If you're willing to be such an evil person to drink whiskey, then we could tax you on and make you pay for it. Okay, so it's like 100%, literally like 100% tax on these kind of things. Well, what happens if I want to use ethanol, beverage alcohol? I want to use it to make something that's not a beverage. It's not a, so to speak, sin to polish your shoes, okay, or to have sunscreen. So why are you punishing me and charging me 100% tax? So what they do is they say, okay, you don't have to pay the tax. How do we know you're not going to take that alcohol and use it for drinking? How are you going to turn it into shoe polish and not use it for and not walk around out the door and start drinking it? So we make you denature it. We make you put something into it that makes it either taste bad or makes it be poisonous. And by doing that, we know you won't drink it. But in shoe polish, I won't bother the shoe polish if it doesn't taste good. Who cares? And therefore, we know you won't use it. We don't have to tax you. And that's what it's called to denature. And the government has different formulations for denaturing that depend on what it's going to be used for. So in sunscreen, they're using formula 40-B. Okay, so it's SD alcohol 40-B, because this is an alcohol that was denatured using that formula, and therefore they didn't pay that huge tax on it, the beverage alcohol tax. Okay, so there's a big to-do in the past 100 years or so as to whether the fact that it's denatured makes it no longer royal achilah now. Okay, it's not for today. It has to do with the things we talked about, of being able to reverse an iser. Remember I told you that if you could you could get around the inedibility, then it's still royal achilah. It has to do with that. It has all kinds of questions, not for today. It's a big to-do in the achronim. And for many years, in Chicago, the position was to be machmor on that shaila. What I mean in Chicago, I mean is that every year there's a letter that goes out, it's on CRC stationery, signed by a number of different rabbis in the community, saying all these types of things, all kinds of medicinal type items like pills and shampoo and pharmaceuticals are allowed to be used, even if they don't have chametz, because in other words, they're not edible. And for these other things, you have to make sure they don't have chametz in them. It gives you a list of other things that you should be careful about. Okay, so some of the people who signed that letter were of the opinion that denatured alcohol should be usher. And therefore, the included in the items that you have to make sure for Pesach were okay were items like mouthwash, okay, things like that they had denatured alcohol on them, okay, or this, what's it called, sunscreen. Okay, that's what it was till a few years ago. A few years ago, that changed. You may or may not have noticed the letter changed. That
this is for keeping your house.
This is for using. It's an interesting question whether it should make a difference for keeping. Well, I'll say yes, even for keeping, it should be the same shiloh.
So sunscreen is like seeing the mosquito?
Nope, it's probably wrong. You're not allowed to hold chametz either. If we treat it like it's chametz, then you can't own it either. Eating it is even more serious, it's more severe to eat chametz, but only chametz is also. So if it's chametz, you're not allowed to eat it also. So you're not allowed to keep it either. So a few years ago, about this changed. Why did it change? Okay, I can't tell you yet why it changed. I'm going to tell you in a second. In a minute, we're going to get to why it changed. But something changed. I'm going to tell you in a minute what changed about it. And now the letter says, I'm going to get that in a second. I'm sorry, I'm out of order. But the letter now says, essentially, is that if it has denatured alcohol, and it's made in the United States, then you're allowed to use it. It doesn't say it in that many words, but the things that the concern is the alcohol, and the alcohol is denatured, and it's made in the United States, I'll tell you why in a second, why the United States is special, then we don't worry about those things. So that originally, the CRC's letter, because of some people who signed it, was saying that denatured alcohol should be considered to be chametz, you should be worried about it, and now that's switched to the point that we say is, no, even though it has denatured alcohol, you don't have to worry about that, okay, if it's made in the United States. I'm out of order. I'm going to tell you 1 second why that makes a difference. The last thing I wanted to tell you before I get to that was this that I told you, that there's no achshavei on pills, on medicine, medicine type things. There's a question whether that applies to vitamins as well. Okay, why should it not apply to vitamins? Well, Rav Moshe says that there's no achshavei on a pill, on a tablet, because I'm taking it just to get better. Well, now the question, how should we treat a vitamin? Because on the one hand, it's the same kind of a thing. I'm taking it just to get better, just for whatever health reason, benefit I want to have from it, that's why I'm taking it. But on the other hand, really, when I'm taking, I'll use the example, I want to take a vitamin C, really I could have just eaten two oranges instead. So in a way, this vitamin is replacing food. So in a way, it really has a connection to food, because it's this vitamin is instead of taking two oranges. So I could have had my vitamin C that way, instead of getting my vitamin C like this. So in a way, it's like a food item. That's the position the CRC takes, that there is achshavei on vitamins, and therefore, If it's a vitamin, we don't say, oh, if it's a pill, it's automatically okay. But rather we say is if there is achshavei on it, and therefore, if it's chametz or treif, then you wouldn't be allowed to use it. Okay? Two exceptions that are. One is when the vitamin that I'm taking, is essentially not replaceable with food.
Vitamin D.
For example, that's a good example, vitamin D. Okay, vitamin D, you get from sunlight, okay, but a better example for you. There are people who have to take 50,000 units of iron, okay? Now, people who have an iron deficiency have to take 50,000 units of iron, okay? So to do that, you basically have to take, a truckload full of meat to get that much iron, okay? So that's not a reasonable, I'm not replacing my food by eating this pill. That's ridiculous, okay? This is not, it's gone beyond the point where we could say this is a food replacement. This is not a food replacement. It's ridiculous. Okay, if I take iron instead of eating one piece of meat, we could talk about that. Maybe that is a food replacement. But instead of, a truckload of meat, that's ridiculous. So when it's say for a deficiency, and you're taking this idiotic amounts, at that point it's not like a food. The other one is when the active ingredient is not sensitive. Okay, let's say the person is, I'll think of an example. I have an example comes to mind. But if the active ingredient wasn't the sensitive part. For example, the iron I just told you about. I take an iron pill. The iron part of the pill is not kosher sensitive. You don't have to worry about the kashas of the iron part of it. The sensitive parts would be the rest of the pill. So, like the Chazanish said, we might say achshavei on the iron part of it, but iron is not kosher sensitive. The other parts of it are like any other pill, and that I wouldn't have to worry about achshavei on the rest of the parts. Okay, so now to conclude, I'm gonna now sort of pull the rug out from everything I told you until now. Okay. And that's like this. I told you, remember my ingredients I told you about? I told you about starch and ethanol and xanthan gum and sorbitol and flavors. I told you all of them, if you think them through, for all of them, all the ones I told you, the concern of chametz is that it starts from a sugar, okay, give or take it starts from a sugar, and the sugar most often starts from the starch. Okay, so the easy way for it to be chametz is that the starch could be chametz. And there are some enzymes along the way, the enzymes also could be chametz, but typically the enzymes could be chametz because they're also made from sugar, so to speak, which comes from starch, which could be chametz. Okay, well, now, before I go on, there are some medicinal items that are absolutely plain old chametz. Okay? A good example of that is Benefiber. Okay, if you took a bottle of Benefiber, you'll see that it's made of wheat starch. That's what it's made out of, okay? That's what it is. So, it's just plain old chametz. So, there are ones that are just good old-fashioned chametz, okay? But for most of the items, the ingredient that's in there that's sensitive is something like these five that I told you. Okay, it has xanthan gum in it. Where does xanthan gum come from? It comes from some kind of a sugar. The sugar comes from some kind of a starch. Well, if it could come from starch, it could come from any starch. As far as the xanthan gum, couldn't care less which starch you made the sugar out of. Okay, it doesn't make a difference to the product. So what happens? What happens is that in every country, when they want to make these items, they look around for what's most available. Okay, so like in South America, they actually use sugar because they have a lot of that. In the United States, we use corn. That's what we have lots of, extra of. Okay, in the Far East, they use sweet potatoes. Well, some of them use rice. Okay, in Europe, they use a lot of wheat because in Europe, that's what they have a lot of. So depending on where the item comes from, plays a big role in what the starch is made out of. Is it made from chametz, or is it made from kidneys, or is it made from something that's completely innocuous and it's no concern at all? Okay, so now we come to a point like this. The ikar hadin, if I don't know whether this thing is made from chametz or not chametz, okay, I have no information whether it comes from chametz or not. It could come from a starch that's chametz or kidneys or nothing. What would I do? What's the din at that? What's the ikar hadin at that point? The ikar hadin is called the parsha root parsha. Okay, I can assume one comes from what the majority is. Okay, and the majority of these types of things is not chametz. Okay, at least coming in the United States, what I told you beforehand about why we're not knocking anymore on denatured alcohol, because the majority is not going to come from chametz, the majority is going to come from kidneys in the United States. So, in a lot, again, some of these things have real, pure, good old-fashioned chametz in them, but lots of them have these kind of things where it's a possibility of chametz. Well, the possibility of chametz, by and large, is not going to be chametz stick. So, now it comes like this. Should I say to myself, The incorrect thing is called the parsh, move parsh. Don't worry about it. Do whatever you want to. What should he say is Pesach. I could be the chametz. So you want to eat chametz on Pesach? Of course you want to eat chametz on Pesach. So why should I choose brand A if I can choose brand B that doesn't have a problem? Or why can't I live without this thing for a few days and I'll manage without it for 8 days? I'll manage instead of taking a chance of eating chametz on Pesach. So that becomes now a rabbinic decision, which is now we have to think about the non-Tufman Bay's parts of what's going on here. From the Tufman Bay's world, we might say is, well, according to my tell, it's called the parsh, move the parsh. But the other parts of it is, well, how sick is the person? How important is it for the person to take this item? How much should you care and say, oh, you shouldn't take this because it might be chametz? Or you say, wait a second, this guy has a serious need, and therefore he should use it. What's going to happen if he doesn't take this thing? Or how available are options in this person? So, it's a suffix. After you listen for the past hour, now you have a suffix. Now he says, now I know enough to know that I don't know where the starch came from. To me, there's indistinguishable starch. It has two gelatin and starch. Okay, now I know that starch can be chametz, but I haven't. There's no way to know for me to know what that starch is made out of.
Contacting the company and going tracing that.
So that's a good question. Maybe I'm going to do that. Maybe yes, maybe not. Maybe I'm going to do that. But if I don't have information, if I don't have that, or if I'm not going to find that out, so I have a suffix. I don't know whether this is chametz or if it's not chametz. Okay, the source tool that's in here, did it come from chametz? Did it not come from chametz? So the baseline thing says called the parsh, and I say no, it didn't come from chametz. Okay, but guess what? I don't have to use this. For 8 days, I'll use a different toothpaste. Okay, I'll find one that someone knows doesn't have chametz into it. Okay, or for 8 days, maybe the guy won't brush his teeth. Maybe I don't know if that's reasonable. But for 8 days, I'll find one that doesn't have chametz into it. So now it needs a rabbinic call of how important is this need? Chametz, it's serious to eat chametz on Pesach. So how important is to have this thing versus how possible that it's chametz? Okay, so by us, it's serious, which I think is responsible. We list things like that as suffer chametz. We don't know. And now, when the rabbi calls up and says, okay, suffer chametz, now what do? The person needs it because whatever, this is the thing. So now there's a judgment, is how important is it for the person to take that thing? Here's the possibilities that it's chametz, and here's the possibilities that it's not chametz, and now you have to make a judgment now. Is the need enough to say is it's a suffer? The rabbi tells us it's not a problem, and if we can have it. So like what you asked before, what about keeping it? You say, for keeping it, you say, come on. The correct thing is that it's not chametz, you can keep it. Okay, what about you want to take it, you want to eat it, actually eat this thing on Pesach, which might be chametz? So most people do or should feel like, I don't want to put something to my mouth that might be chametz. Okay, I don't want to take the thing that might be chametz. But all of a sudden, in a more serious predicament, and things are more serious, now all of a sudden, yeah, it's okay. You could take that kind of food. So that's now a rabbinic judgment at that point, which is why we're not going to, we don't tell people unless we look at the message and say, anyone who's thinking of taking this should definitely take it. Sometimes we'll say it's okay to take it based on this kind of thing, when it's the kind of thing that you only take it if it's a pretty serious condition. You know? That's part of our judgment also. But the things that we write as suffable, we're not sure, you know, it's a questionable chametz, is because they fall into one of these groups where it needs a rabbi to then make that final judgment in the end.